As we can see, James Cameron's Terminator movies of 1984 and 1991 belong to a history of ideas, types, and cliches that constantly revives a form of prehistory. The Terminator movies take imaginary ideas of virile authority and combine them into a final image. We could be looking at the end form of the shooter, the apotheosis of the ballistic man. We might have thought this basically says everything about the archetype of the shooter, but in fact Arnold and James produced a message that, when decoded, takes us into the heartland of the religious system. For Terminator 2 not only shows the definitive shooters, not only a special class of gunmen, men resembling projectiles, no, Arnold, the noble cyborg, has a mission to fulfill that will serve the whole of humankind. A man on a mission. It's easy to see, not only fires off projectiles, but is also an emissary who leads a project from the world beyond in this world. This is not just a man who shoots, but also one who is shot. A man who materializes on American soil in thunder and lightning next to the garbage. It's immediately clear why such a phenomenon leaves film critics helpless. You would have to be a missionary theologian to be able to correctly determine the rank and classification of this strange machine angel. I shall now look at some analytical aspects of action cinema from the perspective of lay criticism of the mission. The first thing I notice is that if Arnold Terminator is really supposed to be a character in the catalogue of heroic virility, he exposes the non-phallic nature of such heroism more clearly than Rambo or Batman ever did. The shift from man to android machine completely reveals the non-phallic character of the flesh-covered tin figure. This man is nothing but an automatic sprinkler. Psychologically, his firepower belongs not only to the phallic, but also to the anal stage. His weapons are not phallus symbols from frontally mounted anal projectors that prepare adversaries for the garbage dump. It may well be... I'll say that again. Psychologically, his firepower belongs not only to the phallic, but also to the anal stage. His weapons are not phallus symbols, but frontally mounted anal projectors that prepare adversaries for the garbage dump. It may well be true that all duels take place among men, but among men in men's rooms, men who trumpet to the apocalypse on the toilet, men who fart each other out of the world using hot air devices from anal technology, when kids cheer at big bangs on the cinema screen, regardless of whether the bangs happen in an old steelworks or in intergalactic spaces, they are exposed to dubious temptation. They are converted to the idea that heroes with male exteriors shouldn't be afraid of anal duels. It is the dawn of an age of telefeces. Indeed, such players no longer aspire to fight and win in a style that qualifies as masculine. They want to make the objects even more like feces and to stride away from shit and rubble. And this is what happens with miraculous lack of emotion and perfect composure. The fighter in the turmoil remains cool as a jewellery dealer, unfeeling as a stone Apollo, taut, taciturn, efficient, the perfect sphincter man. On the outside, he still resembles the historical man, but his construction program has won over the human condition. His construction program has won over the human condition. The motto of his actions is, never human again. In psychological terms, we could describe the cyborg as a fixated pre-Oedipal type. Expert opinions would say that he is subject to a kind of anal dualism that only accepts the alternatives of divinity and shit in relation to objects. And as usual, everything rests on a malign narcissistic syndrome. This brings us to another remark. The male type in action cinema, a la Arnold and James, is treated as if he were made out of pre-Oedipal matter, and this is precisely why he cannot exist without a background figure who directs him. This makes the Terminator the psychological vassal of a lord and transmitter who has programmed him with a mission, like a fully automated Jesuit. Arnold advances as the synthesis of Achilles and Jesus, with the physique of the former and the pace of the latter. As a rule, ever since the historic transition to the style of world-redeeming actions, these actions have had to be executed without hesitating and at top speed. Or, as St. Mark the Evangelist wrote, euthys, immediately, right now, straight away, directly as the crow flies from that place in Galilee to the heavenly goal. And here there's a footnote. On the theme of haste in relation to Jesus, see Hans Conrad Zander, Ecce Jesus, Ein Anschlag gegen den neuen religiösen Kitsch, Reinbeck by Hamburg, Revolt, 1992, pages 27 to 62. I don't know if that footnote was useful to you, but there you go. This is why Terminator 2 is a landmark in media history. Not because it uses film as a medium in particularly advanced ways, but because the medium of God, the missionary, the man on a mission, appears here in a new aggregate state, like an angelic machine, an archangel who has exchanged his sword for an updated weapons system. Arnold is the modern Saint Christopher, who carries the saviour of humankind across the world as if it were a battlefield. A third brief remark about the female transmitter behind the male transmitter. If you have seen Terminator 2, you may be hazy about all kinds of things, for example, about whether the logic of the story is totally absurd or actually makes sense. There can be no doubt about one thing, however. The film presents a snapshot of situations in the matriarchal dream factory of the United States of America. It is a document of agitation by the mother religion that has swamped the Western Hemisphere, not just recently, but more or less unnoticed, since 1967. The film also does something very much geared to our times, something for which Madonna megastar found her own formula on a different stage. It is devoted to the creation of a Protestant Madonna image. The real hero of the story is, of course, as we realised long ago, neither Arnold Terminator, the noble warrior, nor the nice fellow John Connor, the designated redeemer of the world and resistance fighter against the machines. From a structural perspective, the heroic figure in the story is John's mother. It is she who presents the world menaced by nuclear war with salvation in the form of her son. What James Cameron created in collaboration with Linda Hamilton was nothing more than the design of a mother god who had read Simone de Beauvoir and Kate Millett. The authors of this genuinely evangelical project succeeded by making a travesty of the Catholic imago of the Heavenly Mother overflowing with milk and grace. They underwent breast reduction, replacing the burning heart with a training course in shooting, translated the Dolorosa motif into psychiatric treatment, and cut Joseph out of the scene. Even a man who renounced his manhood at the side of the new mother god would have disturbed the cool line of Amazonian perfection. The result is that the second Terminator film reveals a world that is miraculously empty of men, with its centre inhabited by an Amazonian matron with her fatherless boys, and its periphery populated by cyborgs and male extras who can be blown to bits at any time. The centre of centres is still the mother's womb with its heavy Protestant associations, asserted as the epicentre of the mission and of the emissary. Whereas in the case of the Jesus of the canonical evangelists, there was a tacit division of labour by which his physical being came from the mother and his spirit from his supernatural father. In the apocalypse, according to Cameron, the mother is the repository of everything. Being and meaning intersect in the uterus of the new American woman. They not only cross over and meet each other in it, in fact they originate from it and radiate from it like divine sparks from the Pleroma, the totality of the Godhead in Christ. Belly and spirit have united in this form of feminism to proclaim that nuclearism, the ideology of the nucleus, is the last word of the masculine world, whereas autonomous femininity will bring redemption through old, new ecological religion. It follows that Terminator 2 should be read as symptomatic news about processes in the imaginary realm of the world's most perfect matriarchy, the united fodder and mother states of America. I will refrain from linking these observations to Arnold personally, and I will say nothing more about the cult around Aurelia Schwarzenegger, the hero's mother, who directs the mission of the greatest living Austrian from who knows where. All the same, we can imagine that flooding the West with images and symbols could be an element of the capitalist matriarchy that tells everybody to consume so that they may proclaim the splendour of the great mother company. Perhaps the wave of consumption of violent images contains an aspect of truth about the oral empires of modernity that Ernest Gellner aptly called the consumerist unbeliever international. Another footnote. Translator's note. The term consumerist unbeliever international comes from Ernest Gellner, see Minima Cosmetica, note one above. Really? Would it have been so hard? Okay, from the ruins of the Great Contest, Civil Society, Nationalism and Islam in Encounters with Nationalism, Oxford Blackwell, 1994, page 180. Where were we? Okay. My fourth and concluding remark concerns the modernized cyborg that is assigned the mission to kill in this film. He is the only figure in Cameron's cinematic Wagnerian opera that introduces a new, uncanny, nearly transcendent dimension. This deadly actor is based on a morphoplastic system of intelligent liquid steel, a vision of the new netherworld of mind and matter. Looking at this figure, we can say that anyone familiar with the second installment of Terminator has seen the glint in the eye of the contemporary cycline. By now, Arnold is already only interesting in a historical sense, a curiosity from an age of stoical hooligans. There is no doubt that the future belongs to his antagonist, who is capable of transformation. All through the film, Arnold stubbornly remains himself, more or less demolished, an old European machine as a variation of the Aristotelian substance that was to be revived as a founding subject in the modern age. This is very different from the smart antagonist who haunts the screen like a theorem on the importance of function over structure. He can long since become what he sees, equipped with an autopoietic program that generates forms. He reconstitutes himself every time he is smashed up. What makes him a phenomenon is his ability to merge with anything he wants to exterminate. He is self-reflexive like a Hegelian slot machine and selfless like a Buddha. He embodies the perfect completion of post-humanity. He is the first machine that could be a female mystic. Deprogramming it requires using the elements themselves. The indestructible destroyer in the red-hot cauldron of a steelworks only dissolves at the last moment. It is the only place where the transformation of the concrete subject into the element without a subject can still succeed. What can no longer be shot can only be melted down. We think we can actually physically see the death of the Terminator reflecting that of Empedocles across 2,500 years. Arnold and Peitazoon have merged into one person and send merry greetings from the tub. The eyes of the Iron Man in the red-hot cauldron can no longer show signs of madness. He goes towards death, like driving into a garage. The melting of the Machine Man suggests the last violent solution. Was it possible to avoid the feeling that something in the destinies of these emissaries of violence could show us the track of future paths of annihilation?